Azueta.
Presente.
Elvira Rambia Vallejo.
Presente.
Rosalio Buena Anaya.
Presente.
No identificado.
Presente.
Ernestina de los Santos Cano.
Presente.
My name is Ramon Larrada. I had a wife and three kids. I had a great life, but then I was robbed. I didn't have enough money to feed my kids. So I crossed the desert, but my guide didn't know where we were going. So we got lost, and we all died. My name is Ramon Lara Lara.
Presente!
My name is Rosa Baton Luz. I live in the Guatemalan jungle village of Santa Maria Ceja. My husband, Santos, was the first person kidnapped by the Guatemalan army from our village in 1975. I heard an account of his torture from another survivor, but still to this day, I do not know exactly what happened to him. I have a daughter, too, now, who is in her 20s. Santos Vicente Surratt.
Presente!
My name is Antonio Hernandez Ramirez. My father, and his before him were all coffee growers. I am, or I was. When I couldn't sell the coffee I produced from the land passed down to me for a price higher than production, I started the trek north so my kids could eat and go to school. I drowned crossing the Rio Grande, crying for my wife. My kids never found out what happened to me. Antonio Hernandez Ramirez.
Presente!
Welcome you to this chapel, and thank you for coming. We are excited for you to be present with us as we share experiences from our semester in Mexico and Guatemala. The first experience that we have just shared with you happened during our time in Mexico as we studied border issues and immigration. We did this vigil in remembrance of all the migrants who have died trying to cross the Sonoran Desert in Cochise County. This vigil affected us all greatly and is an experience we will carry with us always and remember. While we did not know the stories of the people we were remembering, we have been able to share with you a few stories from people we have learned about, but there are so many more. We have also learned about the horrible and tragic armed conflict in Guatemala and have included a story from that as well. And also, we have met many living people who have tragic and amazing stories to share of struggle to support their family, of experiences crossing the desert, time in the U.S., of living in a violent country, and stories of hope and beauty despite it all. Today, we hope to give you a glimpse into the lives of some of these people and into our semester as we are present together and remember.
I'm going to read a journal entry that I wrote after our time in Mexico that I wrote as I was processing. Mexico in general had a lot to take in because I'd never been to Mexico before, and all of our activities provided a huge variety of sights. What impacted me most, though, were the faces of migrants, of the deported, of the detained, of the rejected. Hearing stories about these kinds of people is one thing, but putting real live faces to those stories turned the stories into reality. Right now, I could not tell you exactly what those faces looked like, and their exact descriptions are fading from my memory. What I do remember is how I felt when I saw those faces, a sort of shock, as I realized that those faces were going through the hardships of everything we talked and learned about throughout the week. Detainees at the detention center, members of the church, the man who came to the migrant resource center, the men at Kame, a local shelter, men from Creda, migrants spotted by our guides in the desert, men and women at the maquila, or local factory, names on the crosses at the vigil, men and women at Thugla Prieta and Cafe Justo. All of these people were affected in some way by the border. Each has a unique story to tell, different from others. Through physically seeing these people, the things we learned suddenly made sense.
With this cup, Lord, fill abundant love in me to go out unto your world with. May I see the passions of your people and overflowing faith that pours out of their souls. May you open the eyes of my group to the injustices of this world and the strength to stand up for what is right. I pray you bless us with a sense of great joy through our most challenging times and the energy to share it with others. Give us the fire in our souls to ignite the ones around us. Grant us sturdy hands to hold each other as we hurt, and the love to give back so graciously everyone feels and knows that you are present here.
Now, we'd like to give you a representation of our semester with some numbers.
The number of U-turns we made in the U.S.-Mexico border.
23. The number of times we've crossed borders.
20. The number of people that have died crossing the desert since 2000.
2004 deaths. The number of undocumented immigrants in the U.S. today.
Over 12 million.
How long did it take us to realize that we left Joel behind at the library one time?
About 20 minutes. Stand up if you were nervous about meeting your host family. All of us.
The number of bus rides taken for school.
46 a day total, and 1,840 all trip. Stand up if you took the wrong bus or missed your bus stop.
How many people can we fit in the back of a pickup truck?
All of us, plus a few other people.
The number of items purchased at Megapaca, the huge local thrift store.
113. Stand up if you received catcalls.
Stand up if you received a love note from your host nephew.
Number of people that died in the Guatemalan Civil War.
Over 200,000. Stand up if you ate a cowhead taco in Chiapas, Mexico.
We did?
The number of pounds of coffee produced from an Arabic tree, a coffee tree.
1 pound per year. The number of pounds of coffee produced from one Robusta tree?
3 pounds per year. The number of pounds of coffee that a coffee grower can carry on their back?
Over 100. Stand up if you got sick at the border.
In Guatemala?
In Chiapas, Mexico?
The number of times we've had diarrhea in total.
Just kidding, you don't want to know that. The number of machetes we've bought throughout the trip.
15. The number of hammocks we've bought.
29. The number of soccer jerseys we bought.
85. And finally, the number of scarves we've bought.
93. Number of journals that we kept in total?
56. The number of pictures taken?
23,647. And the number of memories that we made?
Endless.
This semester, we spend a lot of time paying attention to how we were experiencing Guatemala through our senses. So this is sort of a poem I wrote. I came. I saw many smiles, flowers, aesthetically pleasing tourist spots, the flashy buildings in Zone 10, the shacks propped together in the cemetery. I saw little kids playing tag and so much soccer. I saw city buses leaning to one side with people hanging out the door, and I saw familiar faces on said buses. I saw my host sister excited about a new puppy and 40 Barcelona jerseys in less than 40 minutes at the mall after a game. I felt friendly greetings and kisses, people standing close on the bus, the hot metal frame of a cattle trailer or bus. I felt the bumps in the road through thin flip-flops and the coolness of mud through boots. I felt the hard beds in the rural highlands all night and how wonderful mattresses are when we return to the city. I tasted dust in the desert and clean, refreshing water. I tasted beans in more forms than I thought were possible, and tortillas, white and blue. I tasted various atolls. I tasted chucos, or crazy hot dogs, at the border, and a wild hamburger that included ham and extremely green hot sauce and chiapas. I smelled smoke, burning wood, burning rubber, burning trash, burning food, burning incense, and cigarette smoke. I smelled hot garbage and plenty of bathroom smells, not always in bathrooms. And I smelled sweat and feet and Choco stink and hiking without a shower for a few days stink. And I smelled food, good food, and chocolate chip cookies, and a smell that reminded me of my grandma's house. I heard laughter, car alarms, my host family calling me Susan. I heard buenos dias, buenas tardes, feliz noches, and the indigenous Kekchi saying, Xinquambi. I heard the loudspeakers in Chiapas at 6:30 in the morning and 9:30 at night, announcing, Atencion, mucha atencion. I heard the ayudantes on the bus every day yelling my stop, Novi Centro, Novi Centro, Novi Centro. And I heard Espanol, Espanol, Espanol. And goal! I experienced Guatemala in many ways, and now I'm hoping I've written enough in my journals and taken enough pictures to remember it all. And I hope, as I re-enter my own reality here, I can remember the lessons I learned and share with others.
And now it's time for your favorite show, Spanish Mistakes, where you get to see our Spanish mistakes. Lucas naively introduces his girlfriend Jen to his Guatemalan host parents.
Buenos dias. Buenos dias. Ella está un poco embarazada.
What he meant to say, she's a little embarrassed. What he said, she's a little pregnant. What she meant to say, I'm scared because there's a spider in my room. What she said, I have excrement because there's an orange in my room. A major part of our learning this semester was about the Guatemalan Civil War, which was an incredibly violent conflict, especially during the 80s, where it could be properly classified as a genocide of the Mayan people. And we were reading a book by an anthropologist about these years, and we were asked to empathize with a person living in the highlands during the genocide, and this is a journal entry that came out of that. The year is late 1982, and Rios Montt has taken power and proclaimed a general amnesty for the war-torn areas of Guatemala. If I were a peasant hiding out in the rainforest after the massive killings, I would want to come out of hiding, but be prevented by a deep sense of dread of anything related to the military. Just months before, my family and neighbors have been brutally massacred without mercy. Still, perhaps I am apprehended in the jungle, or I come out due to starvation, as my former neighbors have cut down my only food source, albeit with guns to their head. The soldiers bind me so tight my wrists and feet bleed. They throw me into the blazing sun without food or water. Still bound, I can't even relieve myself with dignity, so my pants are stained with urine and my own feces. The persistent tropical sun beats down on my black hair and brown skin, peeling my skin from my body. Over several days, burning pain coupled with starvation. Then the soldiers come into the yard. They're screaming. They kick me as I lay helpless on the ground. A boot collides with my teeth. I taste blood. It runs slowly because I'm so dehydrated. The soldiers continue to yell. They have guns. "I'm a guerrilla collaborator," they say. "My hiding in the jungle proves it." They point their rifles at me. They want names. My wife is in the room next to me. The soldiers have finished beating and interrogating me this morning. I hear my wife's screams, her weeping, and her whimpers, and silence. Soldiers swag in and out of her holding cell.
O God, give us ears
to hear the voices of those whose voices are often ignored. This is a journal entry from April 2nd, during free travel at a beach in Belize. We were sitting out on the porch deck of our cabin on Thursday, and it was early afternoon. It was the hot part of the day when we sat very still and waited for the breeze to come in off the ocean and reach us. As we were all grouped around, two men came walking down the sidewalk road thing. One stayed there, and the other walked down our sidewalk and began speaking. I'm curious what his first language was, or maybe he had a speech impediment. Either way, I had difficulty understanding him, but I eventually got the gist. He carried with him a black grocery bag with a tool belt inside, and he was trying to sell the tool belt. I think we all felt a little relieved when we heard he was selling something. It's easier to refuse to buy something than to refuse to help someone. As far as I understood, he had left his family to come looking for work, but I don't think he'd found any. When we said we weren't interested in the belt, I think he asked for money. By then he was babbling and we were splayed around in a half circle, staring. We were looking at each other, him and the floor, simultaneously trying to figure out what he was saying and how to get him to go away. We were trying to be kind, but I'm now quite certain that there is no kind way to refuse help to someone so obviously in need. He paused in his muttering to look at us pleadingly, but was met by a look of, "I'm sorry, no." As he slowly folded up his tool belt and put it back in the plastic bag, he turned away, and I could see tears forming in his already bloodshot eyes. I think I saw then how wrong it all was, but I tricked myself into thinking it was too late to do anything. I told myself that I just couldn't understand his English and that I didn't want a carpenter's belt anyway. As he turned away, the other man came toward him and met him on the path. He put his arm around him and seemed to comfort him in a low voice as the man with the tool belt wiped his eyes on his loosely hanging black faded t-shirt. Then they returned to the sidewalk street and walked on. The surprise of seeing him quickly wore off and the reality of his request sank in. They walked on in the blazing sun with no water. I'm very scared that he mumbled with a dry mouth. Hindsight is 20/20, and I know there are a million things that I could have asked or done. That was Jesus and I gave him no food or water. I saved my money for gelato later and didn't even think of water. I prayed hard about this. I don't want to turn this into a story of guilt assuaged. God's purpose is to kindle and ignite us with God's fire. Check the hymnal number 135 if you're curious on that. But I do think that I've begun to learn God's grace on this trip. As surely as someone saved from a godless life of sin, I need and receive God's grace. As surely as someone who'd killed, stolen, had premarital sex, danced, adulterated, idolized, or coveted, I need forgiveness. And God gives me that with the compulsion to do better. I'm sure it's a journey, but I think that this failure and this prayer opened my eyes to the fact that my ignoring this man, and need in general, does qualify as sin, and that I, as a sinner, need and receive God's grace and forgiveness. There is a wideness in God's mercy.
O God, with these eyes.
Let us see the ways that this trip, the people we meet, and the places we go will fill our lives with a greater love and understanding.
This is a letter that I wrote to a woman that we met in Chichicastenango, Guatemala, at a women's cooperative. To one of the four Anastasias that we met, you and the other ladies of the cooperative left an unerasable image on my mind. Your weathered and wrinkled faces held a joy that I hoped to find. I was amazed to see that joy in you, given the tough circumstances that you have lived through. But you have still found joy. And that gives me hope that even through my petty, everyday struggles, I too can find a joy that creates deep laugh lines in my face and a beautiful sparkle in my eyes, just like you have. I also loved seeing how that joy was transferred and communicated without even needing a translator. It was almost like a palpable gift that you handed to me. Thank you. I will never forget your face, your smile, your laughter, and especially your joy. You painted a picture of how I want to be at your age, surrounded by friends, laughing, passionate, and above all, joyful. I have learned so many things in the past weeks. I have learned of pain and suffering, struggles and sadness. I have learned about the cruel acts of the military, the thousands of innocent lives cut short. I have learned about guerrilla armies and their methods of stopping the killing, using more killing. I have learned about your country's struggles with power and greed. I have learned about the unfair discrimination you have faced on different levels. Because you're of your gender, you are expected to be quiet and complacent, serving men without complaint. And because of your race, your heritage, you are discriminated against. Everyone is trying to control you, yet you wear it with grace and pride. You don't try to hide your history, and I find that deeply respectable. I have also learned of hope for your country. People are fighting for your rights, both as a Mayan person and also as a woman. Change is in progress. I have heard from organizations, MCC, Anadesa, mission groups, and local organizations working for rights, education, increased employment options. I have learned that even though the past is dark, there is more joy to come in the future. I have learned that people here are beautiful and always eager to smile. After all this learning, I am even more impressed by your obvious joy. I want to have the kind of strength I saw in you and give others the kind of hope that you gave me. Thank you.
O God, help us to see
the good, the humanity in everyone we meet, to remember that they are sons / daughters of someone just like we are.
Throughout this trip, we've experienced unending hospitality, whether it was being welcomed into a home for a meal, a conversation, coffee, or people just adapting around us to our needs. Yet probably the most significant bit of hospitality we each received was our time with host families in Guatemala City. For our 2 months of language study in the city, we each lived on our own with a host family who received us in as a son or daughter. And though words can't do justice to the conversations, the love and patience given to each of us, here are a few insights to our time with our host families.
Well, my family consisted of a mom and dad named Carlos and Marie, and an 18-year-old sister named Desiree, or Desi. It was great, because neither I nor Desi had ever had a sister before. From the first day I met them, I was a part of their family. They took me as their very own daughter. They always wanted me to be a part of whatever they were doing. People would look at my family and would know that I didn't belong, but they made me feel like I did. I thought my lack of Spanish would keep me from forming a strong relationship with them, but I was wrong. They taught me a lot about Spanish, and every day they told me my Spanish was getting better and better. Their hospitality was enormous. We made great memories together as a family and learned a lot from each other. When our time in Guatemala came to an end, it was sad to say goodbye, but I knew we would always remember each other. I came to Guatemala with two parents and three brothers and many, many other relatives. But I left Guatemala with another set of parents, a sister, which I've always wanted, and even a grandmother who said if I ever want to come back, she would pay for everything.
My host family consisted of a mother, Aaliyah, who loves to cook, and she sometimes sells food on the streets to earn some money. I had a sister, 24, named Roxana, and she works full-time and also goes to school on the weekends. I had a brother, 19, and he works full-time. My family definitely lives simply, but very definitely there is sufficient. There is never a question of if there's going to be food on the table, and they were very generous with me and shared everything they had with me. The last day I was there, they were like, "Austin, this room you have is always yours. You can always come back whenever you want. In the bed, you can always have it." And just as a joke, they told me they were going to sneak in the last night and tie me to a ball and chain so I couldn't leave.
My family consisted of Julio Cesar, Elsie, married, and their granddaughter, Carmen Lucia, who is studying to be a dentist, and it was the main reason I was placed with their family, as we're both biology nerds. Initially, when Elsie would introduce me to friends or family, she described me as a student from the States who was staying with them for the next 2 months. But as time wore on, she referred to me as mi hijo, my son, or mi corazón, my heart, more often than simply using my name, and took great pride in my accomplishments, regardless of their seemingly insignificance. Part of me felt like a little kid again as I explained what I had learned about that day, and then discussed it with her and the family over coffee or supper.
During our week in Chiapas, we stayed with host families, with coffee growers of the Cafe Justo Cooperative. This co-op provides the growers with a stable price for their coffee, and with that stable paycheck, they are able to stay with their families and land, continuing the tradition of coffee growing instead of immigrating for work. Plus, it's really good coffee.
Box with a bunch of notes from us. Thank you.